Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The models, well, they're not pretty. They are variable, and they still carry a lot of uncertainty, but epidemiologists are attempting to map out the course of the coronavirus outbreak, when it will peak and when it might start to decline. So we are going to follow how one model plays out. But the main takeaway is this: prepare to keep everything shut down for longer yet. We start with what the latest models are and what they are telling us about the spread of coronavirus, especially in the U.S. Dr. Vin Gupta is a professor of health metric sciences at the University of Washington Institute for Health Metrics. So, doctor, give us the headline.
It's that we don't have enough ICU beds in this country, and that we are headed towards a reckoning by the middle of April, where every modeler, every analysis that's looked at this — these are really smart people, both at the University of Washington, similar studies out of Harvard — say that we're not going to have enough ICU beds for the country. Some states don't have enough ventilators, period. But that's why we're forecasting, the University of Washington is, almost 81,000 deaths if nothing changes. That means if we just continue social distancing measures and continue to try to do what we're elected leaders are trying to preach, we're still going to see a lot of loss of life. And it's only going to get worse if we loosen some of these restrictions, which President Trump and others have been talking about. So this is really serious. And we're on the back end. Our most sophisticated capabilities are direly lacking, specifically ventilators and ICU capabilities more broadly.
So, important note on what you just said there. This is with what's going on, because a lot of the dire predictions we've seen from the state officials is, if we stopped everything or if we weren't doing the actions we have now, we would have this. But your projections are a lot of death and a lot of hospitals being overwhelmed, even with the current social distancing.
That's what's being forecast. And so, you know, in a forecast, in any model, there's always some uncertainty. So there's quite a large bandwidth of possibilities around that number, that point estimate of 81,000 deaths by July. And that bandwidth goes anywhere from 30,000 to 160,000 deaths. So the worst case scenario is that we loosen social distancing or try to patchwork approach at the county level, as the president was suggesting yesterday. And I think if you saw those policies come to bear, you're going to see a lot more deaths, probably more towards 160,000. There is a chance that if we get stricter, if we do a national lockdown, if we get surveillance even more on board than what we have now. Testing isn't going that great. Per capita testing in the United States is actually quite low relative to most countries. So if we get those things fixed, maybe we're on the lower end, but we're still going to see significant loss of life. At least that's the likeliest outcome, is significant loss of life, the number being an estimate.
So, you know, we've asked this question before about the lack of ventilators and other necessary equipment. And what's still shocking to me is that we've had expert after expert tell us none of this is a surprise, that people have been talking about this for one, sometimes two decades, about not being prepared for things like bioterrorism, that sort of thing, which would have required much of the same equipment. So I guess I'm puzzled, and many Americans are puzzled, about how we got here.
What's different about biosecurity threats, in my view, and I say this as a former military doc, what's different about biosecurity threats than, say, a cross-border threat from a country that has an army, is that you can't see a biosecurity threat. You can't predict its behavior when it may or may not threaten the United States and our borders. And so it's really hard to prepare. It's really hard to convince the people, the American people in this case, that this is something we should be earmarking tens of billions of dollars for every year in the budget to prepare, to stockpile. It's really hard. It's an easier sell to say, let's have military on the ready in the event of a terrorist attack. And so it's just a harder framework. I think it's going to be a lot easier to make this claim for increased preparedness for the next pandemic now, because this has been so psychologically traumatic for the entire country, if not the world. No one will forget this. This is unlike anything we have seen in a century from a public health standpoint, probably equally, if not more scarring in some ways, than 9/11. And so we're going to see, I think, a sea change in how Americans and the world think about preparedness for a pandemic. It's going to be akin to how we prepare for more conventional military threats.
Until then, how much longer of this do you think we have? How long does it take to flatten a curve?
I think it just depends on leadership at the federal level. I think what we're doing now is not effective. We are lulling ourselves into the sense of let's get back to normal life as soon as possible, and we're taking some states are under suggestions for social distancing, others are under law for it, and that's just not going to work. We can't have half the country doing one thing and the other half doing another. It's not going to work. It's middle of the road, and we're going to get a middle of the road outcome, and it's going to extend out transmission of this virus, I would suspect, into the early summer at the latest. You would think that maybe we could have cleared this more sooner if a national lockdown had been implemented when it should have been implemented in late January, early February, once we started seeing cases really on the rise. So I think we've shot ourselves in the foot here. There are strong measures that the federal government could take today. They should have taken 4 weeks ago, such as the Defense Production Act and being really intentional about utilizing it, and a national lockdown that would have stemmed a lot of the crisis that we're seeing right now. It probably brought it to a close a lot more quickly.
I'm curious, does your modeling include the variable of perhaps ongoing trials showing over the next few months that some of these therapies that some people think may work or be effective might be declared to be effective and therefore diminish the death rate?
It does not include the possibility of therapeutics that are not on the market right now. And so that's an incredibly challenging variable to account for. So therapeutics or vaccines coming on the market, it does not directly measure the impact of that on anticipated deaths. And so that is one way we can really impact our estimates, that if there is a magic cure down in the pipeline in the next few months, we're talking about the next 3 to 4 months at scale, however unlikely that is, that could certainly impact the worst case forecast or even the best case forecast.
All right, doctor, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.